Artlist.io.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never know I'm best, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back. Welcome back to That One Studios here on the What Are You Made Of show with your boy C-Rock. I'm in the building today with Jace Madison. He is the host of the Millionaires Unveiled podcast. This show's been going on for a while. I noticed it had like 300 plus shows. And I don't think a lot of people understand what goes into doing that many shows. I don't even know what number I'm on, but I'm in that range, somewhere in that range. I know I've done it over, with me going on shows, over 1,000 almost now, podcasts in the last 4 years. But people just don't realize what goes into that. But also they don't realize the importance of podcasting like consistently and over long periods of time. So Jace knows this, and he's a husband, father, three, ATX-based, former Big Four CPA, spent most of the time as the CFO of a building material company, managing his investments across franchises, real estate, and other private businesses, and is, again, as I mentioned, the host of the Millionaires Unveiled podcast. I see you like golfing. That's another thing you put in here, which that's awesome. Jace, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, man. So, you know, this show's called What Are You Made Of? We want to find out what the ingredients are that have gone into you. We want to hear about what you're into as far as the work and the podcast as well. But we're going to dig deep, and I ask that you be vulnerable and transparent if you're cool with that, because the audience will relate better that way. So do I have your permission, Jace?
For sure.
All right, brother. Let's ask a question to start the show. What are you made of?
Grit.
Yeah, that's it. Simple as that. I love it.
Yeah, I know your show starts like that, and I was thinking one word, and I think grit sums it up the best. But no, okay. I could elaborate on that. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into that. You know, I have a phrase that I like to say a lot, to be consistently consistent. And you mentioned going on 6 years, the podcast every week, never missed. What goes into that? I look at a lot of things I do in life, and being consistently consistent is something that I can hang my hat on across the board, no matter what it is, whether it's working out, whether it's showing up for my family, whether it's showing up for work, consistently consistent. But there's a lot of grit that goes into everything that I've done, where I've come from, and essentially what I've built and am building, you know, in my life and in business.
Yeah. I mean, have you noticed that everything good that's come from your life comes from times where you were consistent?
For sure.
You know? For sure. I mean, it's and even when something appears that comes out of nowhere, you look back, you really dig, you find out that you caused it somehow by doing something over and over and over and over and over again,
mm-hmm.
You know? And so tell me about the business that you're working on now. Like, what are you doing right now? What's your focus? What's got your attention?
Yeah, so my non-compete was up a little over a year ago in the building material space. So I'm back doing another roll-up. And that's what I spend most of my time doing. And then, I've got the podcast. It's been going on 6 years, and then I invest in franchises and real estate and all sorts of things. And so, you know, those keep me busy a little bit on the side, but I've got three kids and then got two in the oven. So,
whoa,
it's a wild household.
Congrats.
In my place.
Yeah. Thanks. Wow, dude. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, like, so you have three right now and you're thinking, oh, well, we'll have a fourth, and then boom, you have five.
That's exactly what it was, man.
So, wow. Crazy. Man. So let me go back for a minute on the roll-up. Like I understand what roll-ups are. I've been in M&A before and all that. So, but for the audience, what is a roll-up, and can you explain a little bit more detail for the audience?
Yeah. So in this space, and I've been in it now, gosh, almost a decade. I was with one company that I did a leverage buyout on some of the equity, and then we sold, and then stayed on with the company that bought us for a little bit and left, went to private equity, and then had an opportunity to kind of come back in this space after the non-compete expired and whatnot. So, barely highly fragmented. We buy up small lumber yards, hardware stores, primarily in rural tertiary type markets, and essentially, you know, band them together, get purchasing power, get synergies across the board. And, you know, a lot of these are owned by baby boomers that don't have a succession plan, or they do have a succession plan, and even that succession plan wants to sell. Because it is getting more and more difficult to operate, you know, as things scale, technology changes. A lot of these people ran the business without adopting technology and kind of just deferred it. And at some point, you just can't do that. And so, you know, it provides an opportunity for us to come in and take ownership and take control and provide best practices, provide their employees with career plans and career opportunities that they may have never had, working at a single location or two locations or whatever.
Has hardware taken a hit like a lot of other brick and mortar stores have with online, and or it's not as much?
I mean, in these rural communities, Amazon last mile doesn't exist. So
yeah.
I mean, that's 30% of the business. I mean, 70% is really on the lumber side. So
okay,
New construction, repair and remodel. I think that's one of, at the end of the day, it's distribution. And I think that's one of the great things about distribution businesses or distribution type businesses is it, at the end of the day, it is hard for other distribution companies to disrupt distribution, whether it be technology or not, especially when it relates to lumber, because the product's big, heavy, has to be moved with lots of equipment, can't be delivered in a small box like you can get your, shampoo on Amazon for.
Right. All right. So how did you get into that lumber?
Yes, kind of a weird story, right? So I was in public accounting, and then I went to an outsourced firm shortly after that. I got my CPA license, and I had one of my first clients when I opened a new office in a new area was in this space, and they were in trouble and kind of found a love for it. I was trying to help them find somebody that could help them, in-house, as my firm was basically just, charging them to do some service work for them. And the board came to me one day and was like, "Hey, we don't really want to go look for anybody else. We want you." And I was like, okay. I never thought I would ever be in this kind of world, but this is actually really interesting and it's been a lot of fun the last few months. So yeah, let's see if we can put something together, and came to an agreement, did a leverage buyout on some of the equity, and figured we could kind of turn. They were in some financial trouble, not necessarily operational trouble, but they were in some financial trouble. And I thought I could, provide some additional value there. It's going to take a couple of years, but figured it might be worth, I was in my late 20s at the time. I was like, I got no kids. Might as well roll the dice on this and see what happens.
And what was it that they loved about what you did that they didn't want to find anybody else? Like what value did you bring to the table? Because by the way, I'm not questioning your value. I just don't know. I don't know you well enough to know your value. So Chase, what did they see and what did they like about it?
I think part of it was, everybody that had been in that world and everybody on the board for the most part was a baby boomer. And, they saw the lens, they saw the business through a very different lens than I saw it through. This company had been operating for, 135 years. I mean, it had been founded in 1881, gone through all sorts of economic cycles, as you can imagine, and literally was nearly, on the brink of bankruptcy all of a sudden post 08. It's like kind of a question mark, like what in the heck? Like how could we get through the Great Depression and all these wars and 08 and, the dot-com boom and all that and bust? And then here we find ourselves in, 2014, 2015 when we're struggling, like especially in Texas, like that was a little bit of a question mark, right? And, they had done some things and made some decisions that were probably not in their best interest at the time and had kind of levered up the balance sheet and done some other things that, trying to be aggressive and grow. But I think between that and some of the ideas that I had that were like way outside the box, different than they had been used to, and really putting some pencils, down to some paper of like, hey, these are the five things that you need to execute on to get this thing turned around financially. And I had quite a few contacts actually make that happen with some banks and some other things, that were of value to them to do so.
Gotcha. Yeah. If you find companies that you've worked in, like they start to get distracted by different things. And sometimes when you have too much opportunity to expand maybe, and you just spread yourself too thin, and then you miss out on the areas with like the main thing. What's the main thing? Let's keep the main thing the main thing. Is that what you find a lot of times?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's very, common for entrepreneurs in general or just business in general is it's like, well, how do I go out of everything? How do I go grow? How do I do this, that? And they get distracted with not actually like really, focusing on those core competencies and making sure that they are the best at those no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like you start something, right, which is your main thing. And this is what I found me personally, right? And it's not working as fast as I think it should, or I underestimate the amount of effort it's going to take to really achieve it. So I think it's not working. So I'm like, oh shit, I got to figure something else out because this might not be the thing. So then I go over here, and then I take your eye off here. Of course, this is going to suffer. When if you just laser focused on this and you keep pushing and pushing, eventually, most of the time, if it's the right day, it's going to work. And I know that that happens to me personally, single entrepreneur, small businesses on up, even the bigger ones. And it's crazy how you're talking about this company almost lost it after they've been through all the other things. And that seems like to me the thing, like they were just focused and made some decisions on some things that weren't keeping the main thing the main thing. So yeah. All right. So where did you come from, Jace? Like what was like growing up? Like what kind of family did you have? Like,
I was born in Houston, Texas, raised primarily in Eastern Washington. My parents were both in the medical field and, you know, I was the oldest of four kids. So grew up, thought I had quite a pretty good lifestyle, played basketball and some other sports growing up, went to the lake all the time. You know, looking back, it was a little bit more of a small town feel than I realized. I mean, lived in a kind of suburban area. I mean, 20 minutes from downtown, but it's a small city for most people in Spokane, Washington. And, yeah, I mean, life was great as a kid. I loved it. And then, went to college and, went on a church mission to Eastern Europe, to Bulgaria, and then came back and decided to major in accounting and kind of take a traditional route that a lot of people took and went to Big Four. And that's kind of that in a nutshell. But yeah, I mean, I had a great childhood, very supportive parents. I mean, there's definitely challenges with all that, but, yeah, it's a great time.
So with that being said, like I came from a broken home. Don't remember my parents together. Like totally different story. Right. But do you like, what was the first adversity you remember running into as a teenager or into your 20s, the first adversity you ran into that you maybe weren't like necessarily prepared for because you had like not a lot of conflict growing up? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't necessarily have conflict in the house with my parents that some people might have, but you know, my mom did struggle with depression. You know, there were a few suicide attempts. So like those, you know, talk about some stuff that it was tough as a kid. I mean, those were scarring, but I was also young. I didn't quite understand, you know, everything that was going on, but my parents had a pretty good relationship. You know, my dad was extremely supportive and whatnot, but there was, my mom had gone through significant amounts of trauma as a child. I mean, she was a teen baby and her parents were very supportive. You know, they got married, they stayed together, but my grandfather had a pretty tragic accident in his early 40s that you know, basically made him a quadriplegic, so he couldn't, you know, earn anything. My grandma didn't have an education, so she kind of, you know, raised six kids making, you know, call it $10-$15 an hour pretty much her entire life. My mom was out of the house when, you know, essentially that happened, because she was a teen baby. But you know, and she had some other things that were, you know, pretty tragic that happened to her. And I think all that led to some of the depression along with some of the other things. And so, you know, I'm living in the Northwest doesn't help with weather and everything else. And so I saw it all going on, but it, you know, I was just so young to kind of really compartmentalize or understand what was going on. I was, you know, pretty focused on playing basketball and quite frankly, honestly, making money. I mean, I started mowing lawns and started a paper route when I was, you know, in my early teens, and I was out there hustling for a buck. And partly it was because my parents were like, we're not buying you everything you asked for, even if they could. I mean, they were very hard workers, both of them. Both of them were kind of first generation, you know, educated in their family and took a very different route. I mean, both my grandfathers, my dad's dad was a large contractor, built large buildings and did pretty well for himself. And my mom's dad, before he had his accident, was in the HVAC industry. And so they were kind of, you know, call it, I've got a little bit of it in my blood to be in blue collar. I do. But my parents both went medical, you know, very highly trained professionals and took a completely different route. And most of the people in their family did as well. Nobody kind of went the blue collar route. And so I had that, but I had great examples of them working hard and really kind of pushing me to go kind of create my own path, but very risk averse household, at that as well.
Yeah. So then having that blue collar mentality, how have you, or what, when did you, I guess, start thinking differently about more like building wealth versus the blue collar mentality of, you know, having more consistent income? And, when did that switch for you, or, you know, cause obviously it has, cause what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, so with my dad, I mean, my dad's, I love him to death, but he, and he and I are very similar in many ways, but he is very risk averse. And so I grew up like, you know, hey, we're not going to have debt. We're going to, you know, not use credit cards, basically. I mean, they have credit cards, but it was like, you know, we're pretty risk averse. We're going to put our money away in the stock market. And that was it. And he's done extremely well for himself. And so it's hard for me to look at him and say, well, the path you chose doesn't work, because it did.
Right.
You know, he's going to retire with dignity. He's done phenomenal, you know, for himself financially and for everything that he wanted to do, you know, in his life and for us kids and everything. But I started realizing that, you know, I probably was going to have a little bit different path, you know, in my mid 20s post graduation. And that was mainly just driven by, hey, I like some of this, but I want a little bit different kind of approach, and I'm probably going to take a different approach. But I had to unpack a lot of that, you know, because I was risk averse, quite frankly, for growing up in that household for all those years. And it served me well to a point, but it wasn't the way that I wanted to kind of live forever, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, no, that makes sense. Definitely. What's the situation as far as when you started to like realize investing in real estate and what have you, like the way you were going to build wealth? Like, was that when you started working for these big companies, or was it when the lumber company you were working with?
Yeah, I think it's hard to really pinpoint when that happened. I mean, I always had an interest in small business and real estate and other things. It probably really didn't, the switch probably really didn't flip, and I really didn't start kind of carving out what I thought I really wanted to do and how I wanted to do it until, honestly, I started getting real heavy into the podcast, because I started interviewing all these millionaires and understanding like different strategies. And then, you know, I moved to an area in Austin, Texas, where the entrepreneurial vibe is very different than where I grew up, where people will create stuff out of thin air and make, you know, millions of dollars doing it. And, you know, I just wasn't exposed to that stuff. Most people I knew growing up were either in the medical field or were part of a small business, but nobody really talked about that. It was kind of all under the table. Wealth was never, you know, outside of knowing my parents did. I mean, I knew what some of my friends' parents did, but it was like never much of a discussion. And, you know, you go to some of these other towns and places in the country, and you're like, oh, that's what generational wealth is. Holy crap. Like, that's kind of cool. Like, that's interesting. I didn't know that was even possible, you know?
And who's as far as mentorship, obviously that sounds like mentorship played a role in this, right? Who was the main mentor for you, like that you would, you know, be top of mind with right now? Like who's that person that you really immerse yourself in?
Man, it's hard for me to just pinpoint one. There's been a lot along the road, but I will say one of the first people that I met when I moved to Austin, through a couple of random connections, was a guy named David Osborne. And, you know, he's been probably the most instrumental as it relates to like the way that I take, you know, from a goal setting standpoint and just an overall mindset, standpoint. You know, he's been pretty critical in helping kind of me develop some of that myself.
And when you set a goal, you just talked about goal setting, like what's, is it the old fashioned way of setting a goal and then creating milestones and plan, or like what did he teach you? Kind of lessons.
Yeah, I mean, I basically set kind of goals and stuff in like what I call and what he calls are kind of like the 8 gardens of life, and I've made a few modifications to those over the years. But yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, other than having these things literally at the forefront of my mind daily, between my phone, my computer, my car, like everything I'm doing. Yeah, I mean, I'm creating milestones. I'm looking at things. I'm tracking things. I would say that as much as there is an annual piece of it, there's also a monthly rolling 12 of everything in some respects. And so I do spend a lot of time thinking about putting a vision together of what I want to accomplish, how I want to accomplish it, and who I want to accomplish it with.
And then are you a guy that like sets unrealistic goals, or quote unquote unrealistic goals, like really big? Or are you more of a reasonable goal kind of guy?
A little bit of both. I mean, there's definitely some stuff that's like, hey, let's put together, what does this grand vision look like, you know, across 10 years, 20 years. But, you know, I want to have some reasonable stretch, but attainable but not attainable in the mean like, hey, I'm going to hit that. It's no, I got to work and make sure that I'm going to hit that, you know, and some stuff may be completely out of reach. I mean, there's times and I look back and I do go review what I've done in the past where I look back, I'm like, what was I thinking? Like, this is nuts, you know, trying to, and some of it's completely out of my control, but I make the efforts of all the things that I can control to try to make that thing happen that I can't control. You know?
Yeah.
And those are the things I look back on and I'm like, yep, those are the BHAGs, but I'm going to put them down for sure. You know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, as a CPA and the background that you have, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of projections that are based off of history. Right. And I think there's a part of that that's got to be there, but damn, that doesn't feel like to me that it could limit you because you're just basing off of things that have been done in the past and not what you're really truly capable of.
For sure. Right?
And that bothers me for myself, me personally. Like I don't like to base things off of history, but you got to learn some from history.
Yeah.
But I just really, I'm always, my saying when I wake up in the morning is like, I want to see how far I can take this thing.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Right. And then also as we go through things, Jace, we become not different people, but different, more capable people based on the repertoire that we develop. And that person is capable of so much more than the previous person.
Yep.
And so it's like a baseball hitter, right? He bats 200 and, you know, when he first comes in, but then he's gone through all these different seasons and different adversities, this and that, and he becomes, and a training, becomes this awesome hitter, right? Yeah. So then you can't really base off the goals off of the history off of that. So like, yeah. So anyway, that's why I asked that question. Podcasting, how did you start the podcast? What went through your mind when you first started it? And like, you know, the reason that you had, and then what has it done for you and your business and life?
Yeah. I mean, the reason we started it, I started with a friend who's no longer involved, but he was with me for about 5 years of it. And, you know, a lot of it was just to learn how other millionaires, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, I had my parents and he had his dad's kind of balance sheets and that was it. Granted, they didn't share it with any of our other siblings, ironically, but we kind of knew what that looked like, but that was it. And two risk adverse dads and he and I were kind of like, well, let's see how other people do it. And we started a podcast, started interviewing millionaires. And, you know, pretty soon the thing took off. And, you know, I've been able to learn a lot. I've been able to create relationships and honestly craft and hone in on my own personal investment strategy and how I think about that from a lot of the conversations I've had around the podcast. And I don't know that, you know, could I have done that without the podcast? Possibly, but there's been a significant amount of value for me personally on being able to hone in on that. And yeah, it's been a fun ride for sure. I mean, heck, you and I got connected basically because of it, right?
Yeah. Oh, you know, I'm a champion for podcasts. It changed my life, man. Like, I talk about this all the time. I started it. I don't even, you know, looking back, I'm like, I just started it because I felt like I got to get my story out. But then it became so much bigger. Like the network that I have, I mean, I was in Vegas last week speaking with, you know, on stage with billionaires and Tucker Carlson and Robert F. Kennedy. Like, I can't even imagine, like looking back, like how the hell did I get here? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like,
it's cool stuff.
Podcasting, the network it creates is just amazing, man. And then also personal brand wise, I wanted to create an attraction model. Like I was chasing my whole life. I've been in sales since 1998. I was tired of chasing, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, you know what, if I get known and I'm really clear on what I'm known for and who I'm talking to, I'll create an attraction model.
Yeah.
And I don't have to chase as much. I can still chase, but I don't want to have to chase all the time. Get tired of that shit. You know, so that's what I noticed. And then when I did, my brand started to grow and I'm like, wow, this is cool. Not for ego, but for that attraction model.
Mm-hmm.
It's just created so many opportunities, like to meet people like yourself, like I said, speaking, you know, opportunities, investment opportunities, all kinds of stuff. I think sometimes you got to be careful. And I'm sure you've dealt with this too, where you're like, you got to say no a lot, you know, and you got to be, I was in situations, I don't know if you have, I would love to hear your thought on this. Do you ever get in situations where you just entertain too much and then you had to be like, one day you're just like, I gotta kill some of the stuff.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, I think there's different levels of things that happen in your life, but that is one that I've realized over the last little bit that it's a skill they don't teach you anywhere on how to learn how to say no and when to say no. But that is something that I've been highly intentional on over the last little bit, you know, and it's not because I feel that I need a different life than somebody else or whatever. It's just, hey, no, I need to have different friendships. I need to have different things in my life that will help me and propel me to where I want to go. And I can't do absolutely everything. And so, no, I literally spent, granted, this also after we sold the company a couple years ago. I mean, I was kind of retired for 7 months, call it. And I was doing all the hobbies that I love to do. And then I got burned out on some. I was like, okay, I realized that there's a limit to like some of these things that, you know, and I've really been able to hone in that from a lifestyle standpoint of like what's important to me, how often I can do it or not do it, how often do I want to do it and need to do it, you know, to make and kind of have that optimal level of lifestyle and happiness for myself.
Yeah, I think there's something that happens. Like when I started trying to do these different things, like different investments and different M&A things. And I was like, I'm capable, right? I'm capable to do each and every one of them. But when it's all together and all my plate all at once, and I'm trying to take care of the family too, and this and that, and then you start to second guess yourself and your abilities, which is not really that. It's just that the approach is wrong.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, 100%. So what's the vision going forward? I mean, do you have a vision to be out there like as an influencer or speaker on stages or coach and mentor, consultant, like beyond what you've done so far, like really beyond the podcast and all that? Do you have any vision on that?
Yeah, I mean, the word influencer and like getting on stage and all that stuff, I mean, you know, 3-4 years ago, I'd have been like, no, dude, like, no. I like to live my life pretty low key, not have too many, you know, people interested or like, I have gotten a lot more active. And obviously the platform of the podcast, which I never really wanted it to be about me, but at the end of the day, like people learn to grow and love a host, even though, you know, because you are the one consistent piece of that. And I've realized how many lives it's changed. I get emails, stuff. Granted, I get the hate mail too, but I think, you know, all that's going to come with some of the good. I've realized that, you know what, I actually probably do have a gift with some of this stuff. I do have some data that is, you know, highly important to a lot of people and myself. And no, I have kind of turned a leaf on that. Now, do I really want to go and blow up the internet and be like, or do I want to spend the time and investment into doing that? Probably not. I mean, I'd rather go kind of probably play around a golf than be worried about how many, you know, people are following me on TikTok or wherever, you know
what
I mean?
Right.
But I have a buddy who's done extremely well with just the LinkedIn platform, so to speak. And he's got a financial advisory business that, you know, he's essentially marketing through some of that, but he's done so much good through that one platform just by sharing thoughts, by sharing, you know, the different things he's involved in. And, you know, I think it's, to me, it's like super inspiring to watch his journey through just that one platform. And so I've been more open to doing some more of that and getting kind of over that preconceived notion that I didn't want to have people, you know, for the most part, I've wanted to be a private person, fly off the radar. Like nobody knows where I'm at, what I'm doing. And that's changed a little bit. My wife kind of actually had a influencer career before we had kids. And that's changed a little bit as she's put more time into and effort into the kids. But I do see, you know, down the road speaking on stage at some point. And I mean, I've done a little bit of that here and there, but, you know, continuing to grow the podcast and really having an influence of stuff that I can look back on and say, you know what, I used my God-given talents and gifts and abilities to take them to the next level. And then I provided a lot of value to other people to improve their lives as well.
Yeah, I love it, man. That's when I wake up in the morning, and if I have any opportunity to do that and I don't do it, I feel like I'm not doing what God put me here for. So it's like, I feel like it's an obligation, you know, and you have the ability, obviously you have the show and all that. So like the more people that you get to know and know you, then the more people that you're impacting. And that's, you know, so I love that. I love that you're turning the leaf over. And again, it's not for ego. It can be turned into ego very quickly, an ego thing. And some people do that and they can't handle it, but others that stick to the mission and why they're doing it, it pays off big time, man. Fulfillment and impact. So, yep. All right, man, let's wrap this up. Final question. What's the most challenging time in your life?
Oh man. Most challenging time in my life. Man, let me take this in a couple different approaches. I'll be quick. As a kid, the most challenging time for me was when I got cut from the baseball team, from the all-star baseball team that went to the Little League World Series. That was devastating.
Damn.
Stuck with me forever. The most challenging time that I had through kind of my, call it the next decade of life, was probably living in Eastern Europe for a couple years away from family, friends, learn another language, teaching people about God. A lot of people didn't want to listen. It's a tough place to live. Very rewarding time, but challenging. The most challenging time that I've had kind of in my adult life, my sister got in a really bad car accident and nearly died. And we, you know, essentially went to say goodbye to her, and then she miraculously essentially was healed the next day.
Wow.
You know, and that was piggyback with my mom getting diagnosed with pancreatic cancer if she already had breast cancer while I was in Eastern Europe during that period of time. So a couple of health challenges on the family front with those, you know, in the last couple of decades, those have been pretty tough.
Yeah, but yet you made through. So, and now you have the ability to impact a lot of people with this podcast and with your business and everything. And I'm rooting for you, brother. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to working with you on something here in the future and building upon our relationship. So thanks for being here, Chase.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, guys, you've been listening to the What Are You Made Of podcast with your boy C-Rock from That One Studio here on Riverside. Till next time, be that one. Yeah,